time now for Stockton Mortgage Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Dan and Mike.
Good morning to all who have been able to navigate the I-65.
Have a little trouble getting in here this morning, Michael?
You got to navigate I-65 going north right around the fairgrounds. I was in a standstill. But I got to tell you, I wasn't tricked today.
Okay.
Because I get up and I get halfway out of my development, realize that I don't have my billfold. And, you know, we've got to pay to park. Okay. Plus, I look down and I got a quarter of a tank of gas.
Do you think we'll ever make that? I look at my credit card every once in a while. I see all these $5 charges for the parking lot out back, and I don't see any revenue coming in. Do you think we'll ever make that up?
I don't know. That's a negotiation point with the boys in Kansas City. We got to have some parking relief here. That adds up. Five times five is in times 10 or 12, you know. Anyway. So I go back and I get my billfold, and I look at my gas tank, and I'm a little under a quarter. And I said, you know, I could get to the studio, and I'll stop at that gas station by U of L.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a game plan. It's easy. So I'm sitting at the light, and I think, you know what, big dummy, go get some gas before you get on the road. So I go down, and I get some gas, get back up. And I take off, and I go down 64 and come across onto Watterson and get off on 65 North, and it's bumper. It's not moving.
Yeah.
I mean, and I called you. It's not moving. And now, I would have been a dead man if I didn't get that gas.
You'd be on the side of the road.
You would have seen me, yes, tomorrow.
Well, I knew you were in trouble because I come the other way. I come in 71 and come 65 south from downtown, and I saw the accident, and it looked like it had been there for a while. The fire truck was already there. The tow trucks were already there. And it was solid line of traffic all the way back as far as I could see. So I knew you were going to have trouble getting in. But it's always, you know, the engineering company who engineered the Watterson and the 65 interchange. I bet they won awards for that. I mean, that's got to be 65. The Watterson going west to 65 south has got to be the worst interchange in the history of interchanges. I mean, it gets backed up all times a day there.
Yep. And you're almost better if you're coming west on 265 on the Watterson. You get off before you're trying to go north or south because it's always backed up.
Yeah, no.
It's always backed up.
Well, you know, those big trucks, and that's what a lot of the traffic is going south on 65. A lot of those trucks, I mean, they got to go down to 15 miles an hour to make it around that curve.
Well, I guess I'll have to ask the question. Do I have a job pass today because it was you and Charles' show yesterday at the end of the day? West Virginia.
Yeah. What was that guy's name you came up with?
Javon Carter. I think the point guard you were talking about might have been Joe Mazzulla.
That was it.
Bingo. Joe Mazzulla. He plays. I think he coaches for the Celtics right now.
Really?
I think that's what it is. Or he has a new head coaching job, but I think it was Joe Mazzulla.
He's about 5'10", Dan.
Hmm.
And they had a big guy on that team, and they just moved the big guy around between elbow to elbow and the top of the circle. And Mazzulla came off the bounce, and we panicked a little bit there in the second half because we were favored to win. And we were behind and missed all those shots psychologically. They made some adjustments.
We were favored over West Virginia?
Yes, we were.
Wow.
Yeah, we had Cousins and Wall and that whole crew, Patterson. We had a nice ball club. But they threw a 1-3-1 at us, okay, in the first half, and we acted like we never saw one before. And they called timeout, and they tried to make some adustments, I guess, and we came back out and kept – we were like 0-for-20 in the first half.
From the three-point line.
And why in God's name would you shoot 20 when you go 0-for-10, you ought to go inside, right? They
kept, you ought to do something. I know
They kept jacking them. So second half, they came out. They attacked where you should. You got to pin that back guy and reverse the ball and then go back in. And Cousins got some hoops because big body pinned the back guy on the 1-3-1, swung the ball, and with that big body, they threw it to him and scored. That was changed to our benefit. What wasn't changed was how to handle the pick and roll at the top, because Mazzulla, is that the guy? He turned a corner, and we either went underneath or just quit going through it, one of the two. I think we had a little panic in us. You know, we had all those freshmen playing, and there were freshmen guarding the ball, and Wall was a good defender, but he and Bledsoe didn't handle that right. They struggled with it. And this guy wore us out, passing, jump shots. The big fella rolled to the hoop. I mean, they had us on our heels. Even though we made a nice adjustment offensively, they had built enough momentum to carry him through the second half.
Right.
And it's that was, I will say, and our first guest today is Jody Meeks. And Jody decided not to come back to Kentucky and turn pro, which is, you know, it was understandable.
Yeah, I want to ask him, but that's going to be one of my questions for Jody. How difficult a decision was that to turn pro and not come back for his senior year?
So with him out there, I mean, everybody said, well, how are you going to play him with Bledsoe and Wall? I said, you know, you play three guards. I mean, back then people go like, what? He's going to play three guards? Now they're talking about playing four guards.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So Meeks doesn't go for whatever. I mean, he can shoot it. And but I always wonder, Tom and I have always talked, when you got to 0 for 10 and you were really struggling, why you continue to shoot 10 more?
Right.
And yeah.
That's a great question.
But Jody would have changed the outcome. And I have always said, I maintain this, and I've said it on the broadcast when we're talking about previous teams. Calipari wins his first national championship if Jody Meeks stays. Because the runway was pretty clear that year. I'm not so sure there was a dominant team waiting for Kentucky in the Final Four.
Okay. And what year was that?
That was 10.
10.
Calipari's first year.
Yeah.
And with Meeks, you got some terrific offensive firepower. And you had Patrick Patterson and Cuz. And that 1-3-1 hugs threw up just really stymied him in the first half.
Yeah.
So. But I just wondered if Charles had decided not to go back to school and take my slot. I mean, I've had friends of mine that have called me or texted me, and they go like, that was the funniest. He said, what was Issel doing with the intern? And they laughed and laughed. But they did say you held your own. They gave you credit for that, man.
I wanted to give up there when you just wouldn't give me any credit for the Javon Carter comment.
Seriously, I don't follow all college basketball. I don't know all of these guys. I have never heard the name Javon Carter. I have never heard the name.
I don't blame you. We don't have. I'll admit we don't have a lot of NBA talent, guys, and that's your forte was NBA, knowing NBA teams. So I wouldn't blame you. We don't have a lot of guys that make it to the NBA. Now Miles McBride could be drafted tomorrow night. And so, do you know Miles McBride?
No.
He's from Moeller. He's from Cincinnati.
I do.
He's from Cincinnati. He's not far from here. So he could be drafted first round tomorrow night. So there's a guy.
First round.
So the same. Maybe top 25.
We need to talk about the draft, too. That's coming up tomorrow
night. We can do it in this half hour, the first half hour of the hour, or we can wait till after we have Hal McCoy.
Let's wait till the third half hour of the second hour.
Wait. How'd you get 3.5 hours? You know, let's do that because I was watching last night between we talked about your Cubbies and my Reds and Major League Baseball Network would cut from game to game. And when they went away from the Reds and the Cubbies, I'd roll over to the draft selection, which our guy Rex Chapman was on. Andy Katz and I don't know the moderator, and then Jimmy Jackson. It was interesting, some of their choices and some of their picks for different teams. Rex said that the 20th pick is, I think, the Wizards, I think. Anyway, Atlanta. Rex says that Isaiah will go 20 to
Atlanta.
Yeah. Mm. But I want to tell you with Isaiah, and I'll rest my case. He needs minutes to develop his game. Now, Somebody misled the kid thinking he's going to be a lottery pick, okay? So now he's fallen to 20 to 25, which is pretty much what I've been hearing.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And he's got to go to the team that can get him minutes. That's what he needs to develop his game, his strength, his offense, his understanding of the game, because the game's going to be totally different. He struggled at times this year getting in, staying in the flow of the game. Now, his athleticism kept him around for a lot of things. But, you know, Dan, when you go to the next step, the top level, you better have a really good feeling for the game. And, you know, he needs minutes, man. He needs a team will put him in the G League and say, I'm just going to work with him.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's why I never thought he was a lottery pick, because you're in the lottery for a reason. You're in the lottery because you're not very good. And you can't, at that point, as a general manager, you can't afford to take a project. I mean, you've got to take a kid that can come in and help you, hopefully, immediately. And that certainly isn't Jackson.
What I found interesting, not just with these guys, because I was coming and going, but if you look at everything that's written pretty much, and I'm a big Cade Cunningham fan. I think he's going to have a long and successful career. And people say, well, he's going to be an all-star. Would you agree? You were an all-star. You cannot predict 99% of the time who's going to be a damn all-star.
No.
Because you go to the wrong team in you know, the time and place. I mean, you could be a really good player and not be an all-star. I mean, you know.
Oh, there's been many of them. There's been many of them because there's only so many all-stars. And as you said, Michael, the all-star rosters are dominated by players that are on winning teams and on championship teams. So you're exactly right. You get lost in the shuffle. You're playing for a team that wins 30, 35 games a year. It's very difficult to make an all-star team.
So what was interesting, pretty much of the first six or seven picks are either high school guys who went to the G League,
right,
or freshmen in college. Okay, because the second projected pick is the green kid who went to play for the Ignite team in the G League.
Right.
Okay, and the first is Cunningham who played college.
Yep.
So everybody after that is either Ignite G League or college guys.
Right. Mobley.
Yep. USC.
He came out after his freshman year, right? And, of course, Jalen Suggs with Gonzaga after his freshman year. You're exactly right.
So I find it interesting, I think what you need to follow is, do you have more value going to the G League? Because these college guys are still being drafted, okay?
Mm-hmm.
They're still being drafted as high, if not higher, than the G League guys.
Right.
Okay?
Right. Yep.
So the real question is, we were all afraid of the G League taking all the players, and they may take three or four top guys. They may, just for the money. But the question is, Are they outside of money, is there value in staying in college versus playing in the G League?
See, I would say 100%. Last night I went to a real nice event down in Lexington. Dennis Emery, the former UK tennis coach and a good friend of ours, they have a professional – now, you know, they're not the top pros, but they have a professional tournament down in Lexington, and even if these guys aren't the top pros, they can play some tennis. But they had a little VIP party, and you know Phil Greer. Greer, high school phenom from the mountains of Eastern Kentucky. And
football and basketball.
Yeah, both. And went to UK and played football there. And that's exactly what Phil and I were talking about the college experience. Now, you can't tell me that you wouldn't have a lot more fun playing for somebody, you know, COVID aside, a packed arena at the Yum Center or a packed arena at Rupp than playing in front of 500 people in a G League game. I wish, and I understand the financial part of it. I really do. But I wish everybody could have that college experience. It's just so much fun.
And everybody was worried that, let's say, 10 or 12 of the top players are going to the G League, which was blown out of proportion because they wanted to fill that team with veteran guys coming from the NBA or Europe or something to give the stability to the Ignite team.
Right.
And they wanted like four or five guys. But everybody pushed the panic button. And along comes the overnight league taking high school guys, okay? And everybody pushed the panic button. But my whole thing is that, it looks pretty good when you come to the draft with all these college guys being picked at the top.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. And, of course, you know, all of this, the Ignite team and the overnight league or whatever they call it, all of that is just a way to get around not being for high school kids coming out of high school to be drafted in the NBA. It's just a mechanism to let them turn pro out of high school without going to college. But, you know, and maybe for some of them it works. Maybe some of them really need the money to improve their family situation. Maybe they just don't like school. Maybe they don't want to study, go to class, stay eligible.
Unfortunately, so, that is the case.
Yeah, but going to college and playing for some of these top-notch programs, I think they're really missing out.
Well, on the projections, the top five, you've got it pulled up there. Who are the top five?
According to the mock draft I'm looking at, Cade Cunningham, a freshman.
College.
And then Jalen Green, who went to the G League. Mobley is number three.
Southern Cal, college.
College freshman. Jalen Suggs is number five, college freshman.
Yep.
And then the one I'm looking at is Scotty Barnes is number five, freshman. So you have to go down, let's see, a sophomore. Four
of the next five, Dan, are college guys.
Yeah. Here's number seven is a foreign player. Number eight is a foreign player. Number nine is a Michigan sophomore. Number 10 is a foreign player. Wasn't there somebody else that played besides Green that played in the G League?
No, not the list I'm looking
really?
At. Oh, Kumonga.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the only G League guy in that second 10. The rest of them are college guys.
Yeah, okay. All right. Yep. Yeah.
And I think Book Knight – and help me with this, Charles. I think he was a sophomore at Connecticut. I'm not so sure he was a freshman.
Yeah, no,
he's a sophomore.
You're right. Yeah, he came out after his sophomore year. He's projected to go number six.
As is Wagner, the kid from Michigan. I think he was a sophomore, wasn't he?
Now, see, there's a kid that I've seen play a couple of times. I'd be a little hesitant taking him
that high.
I mean, just because of not that I don't think he's talented. I think he is talented. But the way the pro game is played today, where does he fit in?
Well, I had the same question, and I would agree with you. Cleveland took the kid from Auburn. He's about 6'6". Swing player. He picked him number two.
You know, you and I, there's a medicine I saw advertised on TV that improves your memory. I think you and I need to start taking that stuff.
Okora.
You came up with it.
You helped. I was thinking medicine.
It's up there. It just takes a while to get out.
Yeah. And I loved Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Loved him. Wonderful kid. Had some issues, nerves, talking, and worked himself through it. I mean, just wonderful kid. And he was picked, too, by Charlotte.
Yeah.
And it never really worked out for him.
Hasn't.
I mean, he played.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when you take the number two pick, I mean, the guy's got to, I mean, be the greatest defensive player in the world, which you're playing against the best players in the world. You know, how is that going to happen, right? You got to score some baskets, don't you?
That's what I always say, Michael. You go to the NBA – in college, you might play against somebody as good as you are, you know, two or three, four times a season. You get to the NBA, you're playing. Now, you might not know his name, but you're playing against somebody as good as you are every night you step on the floor.
And they want to eat your lunch.
They want to eat your lunch. Because, you were the number two pick in the draft, Michael. We're coming right at you.
And there's not a better kid, I thought, come through that program under Calipari than Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. Sacrificed for the team, had a great attitude. And he did at Charlotte, too, but I think they ended up trading. He's now with Dallas, I think, or somebody out west. But here's a guy that kind of fits that mold, Scotty Barnes at Florida State, and another guy, Keon Johnson from Tennessee. You know, they're 6'8" guards, okay, and they can defend and rebound, and Scotty Barnes is a heck of a passer. Keon Johnson's not the passer that Scotty Barnes is, but, man, when you're playing the game from beyond the arc for most of the time, you've got to at least to Keldon Johnson's let's give him a tip of the hat, and we have, is he's become a spot up shooter. When he was at Kentucky, he was, you know, off and on, streaky, and tried to shoot off the bounce and struggle, but he runs the floor, goes to the corner, and has developed a really, really good jump shot.
Yeah,
standstill jump shot.
You know, there's so many coaches now in the NBA that are in charge of player development that you get to go out on the floor, and it's not like college where you have a head coach and two or three assistant coaches that aren't allowed to talk during practice. I mean, in the NBA, you almost have your own personal coach that works with you from the time you get to the arena till the time you leave. And so a lot of these kids are able to develop skills that they didn't have in high school or in college.
Well, it's 2 day or 1 day before the draft.
Yeah, tomorrow night.
So if you're not happy with your draft position, you trade up, you trade down. What do you do? Is that easy to do?
No.
It's all media hype.
A lot of it. Now, we had a trade yesterday where two teams exchanged 10 and 17. But there
Memphis and New Orleans.
But there were players involved in that deal, too. Just to trade up to get a pick, it's very difficult to do because everybody wants to trade up. Everybody talks about trading up. But I think the way it works, Mike, is if you trade up, you have to have somebody who's willing to trade down. And that doesn't happen very often, no matter where you are, because the next guy you draft is always going to be the great player on your team. Plus, you've got to get your fan base involved. And they're excited about these draft picks and following these mock drafts.
That sells tickets.
Absolutely it does. Absolutely it does. So, yeah, just to be able to trade up, it's very difficult to do.
Yeah, you know, we talked about Memphis and the Pels trading centers, in essence, and Bledsoe was the guy they threw in probably.
Right.
Not he's talented, but his salary balances out maybe. They threw that in.
Well,
some draft picks.
Yeah, but that has to happen if both teams are over the cap. But this trade yesterday was imbalanced as far as salaries are concerned. So that meant that Memphis had to have to take Bledsoe and Adams. Their salaries were way above Valakunas.
Yeah, and I think that's what it was.
Yeah. So in order to make that deal, New Orleans had to have cap room to bring that lopsided trade to fruition.
I forgot a trade that was made early after Ainge stepped down. The Boston Celtics traded Kemba Walker. Kemba Walker, even at his age, was instant offense. He goes to OKC with a first-round pick, number 16, and a second-round pick in 25, which is meaningless because we have no idea if there'll be basketball in 25, right? But the Celtics, look, Kemba Walker can score and has scored in the NBA. Now, he's 30, 32.
And I think he had a lot of injury issues this year, didn't he? Yeah,
may
I
have.
Think he missed a lot of games.
But the Celtics get back a second-round pick in 23. Again, worthless.
Yep.
Okay, until 23, and then if it's
and
a good
then
draft.
It still may be worthless.
They get Al Horford, who was the center on the Florida back-to-back teams. I mean, a good, solid player.
And he just left the Celtics when he was a free agent.
And he's like 35.
Yeah.
Okay, and Moses Brown, a big man that is tall, skinny, athletic big man who's never from UCLA, who's never really panned out. I mean, you're taking a flyer on him.
Right.
So that was just passing contracts around, wasn't it?
Well, basically, and especially, but I think there has to be something Boston has to know something about Horford that he was that with the Pacers. Is that who the trade?
No, he was with OKC.
OKC, yeah. He signed as a free agent and didn't have a great year.
No, he sat out half the year.
Yeah, but Boston has to know something about him to want to bring him back to the Celtics. There has to be something going on there that they think he can make a bigger contribution than he did in Oklahoma City.
Well, what we do know is we're up against a break, and we do know the next guest on the Kim Crawford Wine Celebrity Call-In.
No, Celebrity Hotline.
Hotline. Hotline, baby.
Could you write that down, Charles, for him? Just give him a little 3x5 poster card so he can get it right.
Yeah, we could paint it up on the wall.
Oh, that's a good idea. I like that.
That's a great spot.
I like that. That's why we haven't gotten any money back to pay for our $5 a day parking because he can't pronounce the thing right. No wonder they don't want to send us a check.
with that, let's take a break and we'll come back. Jody Meeks is going to visit with us.
It's baseball season.
Get ready for Stockton Mortgage Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
Welcome back. We are efforting, as Dan Issel likes to say, Jody Meeks.
One of my favorite words.
Yeah, one of your favorite words. Until we get Jody on the line. Did you see Patrick Mahomes?
I did.
$4.3 million.
Is that unbelievable?
That is amazing.
Now it's a one of a kind. It was a Panini National Treasure card, one of one, signed by Patrick Mahomes, $4.3 million.
Man, you talk about a love buy. I don't know how you monetize that. I assume that the gentleman or group that bought it, LJ's Card Shop in New Albany, Ohio.
That's who bought it?
That's who sold it? Yeah, that's who sold it. And is they got a brick and mortar shop that they're opening. And it says, our goal at LJ's has always been to build the best modern day card collection for our customers. We continually are hunting for cards that add to our collection in a meaningful way. And the Mahomes is truly a piece of art. We are honored. How about that? It's going to be on display. And then it's going to be put in a vault for safekeeping.
I'd put it in a vault, too, if I paid $4.3 million for a sports card.
Well, the previous sales price was $3.1 million. Tom Brady, 2000 playoff contenders championship rookie ticket autograph card. How about that?
I wonder if that is a one of one. See, that's what
eight
makes
of this. Brady was 8 of 20. This kid is one of one.
One of one. Yeah. 8 of 20, and eight. It still brought over $3 million.
Yep. Tom Brady. How about that? We got Tom Brady here. Well, I'll tell you, it's just amazing what people think is a good investment. And obviously it works for them. I don't have $4.3 million to try it, but
if I had $4.3 million, I sure wouldn't be buying a Patrick Mahomes football card.
Fair point.
I know that.
Fair point.
I know that. But maybe they think, obviously they think they'll make a return on it. And if Mahomes goes on to have the career that Tom Brady has had, it'll be worth a lot more than $4.3 million.
Well, did you see where the NBA has said we're going to keep the play-in tournament?
Yes.
I think that's good. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I like it simply because it keeps more teams from tanking. And that's the whole goal, but it's not. The part of the goal is to have more playoff games to put on television. But I would say the primary goal in the playoff game is to keep those teams that are on the precipice of making the playoffs, keep them interested and keep them going. So, yeah, I like it. I like it.
Well, they also are trying to pass a new rule as far as the shooter jumping into the defender.
I think that's a great...
Isn't it, though? I do, too.
But, you know, I think it's... In theory, I think it's great. I think they do need to take care of that. But the one problem I have is giving the officials one more thing to make a judgment call on. I mean, it would take away the obvious ones, but then, you know, on the ones that are questionable, then it's up to the judgment of the official. And I think the officials, especially in basketball, I think they've already got too many things to keep track of. So,
but Dan, they got three guys. They got six eyes. Now, some of them might be blind. I can see by the look on your face. Some of them may be blind, but they got six eyes in this deal, okay? And I don't know. I really like that because I think there's so many times where the call goes in favor of the offense, even though the defense may have had good position and wasn't reaching and fouling and hugging. They got good position. The offensive guy jumps into them. And it's a defensive foul. That's not right.
Yeah, but see, I my career, whatever success it had, was primarily based on idiots that would go for my fake jump shot.
Did you jump into him?
No.
Okay.
No, but if they try to legislate that, and there's some official staying in there, and he's got to decide if I jumped into him or if the defender fouled me. I don't like that. I want that call 100% of the time. I don't want an official making a judgment as to, oh, maybe he did jump into him. What's going on here?
But if I remember correctly, that when you would sell the fake, the ball fake. As a matter of fact, I was reading something Kareem said that, you were so one of the hardest guys to guard because if you didn't go out on him, you could make that shot at the elbow. And if you went out on him, you didn't know because you would sell the fake and drive around him, okay? And Jabbar said that was very difficult to guard. But I remember if we could have put a saddle on the guys that you faked up in the air and rode you, we would have had a ton of big jockeys because that was your thing. But you know what? If a defender leaves his feet, that's one thing. But if a defender has got good position and he's gliding and his feet are on the ground and he stopped basically the penetration of the guy with the ball, and they jump into him.
No, okay? I agree.
And
it'll stop most of it. But my only point is, on the ones that are questionable, I hate to give the official something else to make a judgment call on.
I can tell that you wouldn't be good as the commissioner of officials. You'll straighten those officials out. But getting back to the NBA and the play-in tournament, that will begin April 12th to the 15th, and the playoffs are scheduled to start the 16th, and they have the NBA finals to begin June the 2nd.
So we're back to the normal schedule that we had pre-COVID, which is, in my estimation, that's good. I don't think we ought to be playing NBA basketball in July. I understand the reasoning for it, but it's good they'll be back to the normal schedule.
To your point, the latest possible date for Game 7 of the NBA Finals would be June 19th. And then the 2022 draft is slated for June the 23rd. So I would assume.
Does it say, Michael, if we're back to 82-game schedule?
It doesn't. And I was you were reading my mind because I was trying to figure that out myself. And no, it doesn't. Training camp opens 28th September. Yeah. Regular season October 19th. Yeah. But here's a couple interesting.
So that means October 19th, so that is a little earlier.
Used to be
around the 1st of November.
Right,
so I'm assuming they're back to 82 regular season games.
And more space between them, because that's what the Players Association wants.
Yep.
Fewer back-to-backs.
Load management.
Load management. I forgot that word. I got to drink my Kool-Aid to get my memory back.
Load managing.
Okay, one of the great inventions of the NBA, one of the great inventions to extend their rosters but not make them full-time employees is the two-way players.
Right.
Okay, you're allowed two of those, I believe. And the teams can have 15 players active for each game with no more than 17 under contract. So that's where you get your two ways. Now, next year, and it's probably a very good spot for a young player because he's going to be up and down between the G League, probably going to get more minutes, individual coaching than he would sitting at the end of the bench and just watching you play for 2 weeks, you know?
Right. Yep.
I mean, that's what it is. The guy, you know, and you work with him before and after practice, but they're not game minutes. It's like being in game shape versus just being
exactly.
in shape, right?
Exactly.
So now the two-way players will receive half of the minimum salary next season, which is probably right at $1 million. Well, it's roughly $463,000.
Okay.
They will be permitted to be active for 50 games next season in the NBA, and the rest of it would be in the G League. Whatever they do will be in the G League. So they could be up a maximum of 50 games. Okay, so let's say they are active for 40, 35 or 40, and they're paid on those games, but they can make roughly $463,000. Not bad for a part-time job.
You think? Well, they continue to expand the rosters. You know, you used to be able to have 15 guys under contract, but only 12 of them could be active. And you would hide out a guy, you know, you say, well, this guy's got a bad back, so we're putting him on the injured reserve list. But now there's 15 active and two-way. So just and we've talked about this before, that the greatest relationship between labor and management in professional sports is in the NBA. The commissioner Stern first and now Adam Silver, they really have worked hard to keep a good relationship with the players. And so this is just another way. You expand the rosters two more, give two more guys per team a chance to make a nice living. And, you know, when it comes time to collect those chips, then the NBA is in good favor.
But saying that, you have 15-man rosters. You got two-way, that's 17. How do you have time to work with all these guys and develop them at the end of your bench? And what I'm going to say to you, with all those players, damn, they can have a couple more expansion teams. I mean, if you can fill rosters that deep, you can share some of those players and get two pretty good teams, you would think.
You would think so. But again, it goes back to splitting the pie. And what I was going to say next was, in the next round of bargaining, it'll be very interesting to see if the players come in and say, we want some of that gambling money. Because I've been told when a bunch of states, there's only five now, I think, but more and more states are going to come online, that the NBA has a sports wagering partner. I mean, it used to be taboo to talk about spreads and over and unders and those kinds of things. Now they're embracing it. And so I'm sure for the next round of negotiations, the players are going to want some of that gambling money too. So that'll be interesting.
Well, if you expanded, the expansion fee isn't shared by the players, right?
No, that's
so. If I'm the owners, I say, okay, I'll take that money. I'll give you some of my gambling money.
Yeah,
but is greed going to overcome?
I would say that right now I'm told that there are two factions, and there's one group of owners that would want to expand and put that expansion money in their pocket. And there's another group of owners that say, no, if we expand, we'll get that money one time. Then we have to share all future revenues with those two teams, and it won't take long to make up that expansion fee. So that's kind of where it is right now.
I want to see the numbers on that. I want to see the numbers on that because the pro forma, because you're talking over $1 billion for a new team, correct?
Oh, yeah. When we first started NBA to Lou, we were operating under the assumption that the expansion fee would be $800 million to $1 billion. And now I think we're thinking closer to $1.5 billion for an expansion fee.
So you got two teams, that's $4 billion, $3 billion.
Yeah.
And you divide it up, do the math on that, 30 owners, whatever it is. It's a lot of money. So we don't know what gambling is going to be at. I mean, are we talking gambling at the arenas or gambling, period?
No, Mike, they're talking about having kiosks. And hey, Charles, who is the gambling website partner with the NBA? Is it check that for us?
FanDuel.
Is it FanDuel?
I think it's FanDuel. Yeah.
Anyway, they're talking about having kiosks in the concourse. So you go into the arena, you get a hot dog and a beer, stop by the kiosk and bet $20 on your home team. I mean, they're going to make it so easy for you and I'm told that in those pro formas, those numbers are – now, it's going to take a few years
to
get all the states – not all the states will legislate it, but it's going to be – the state's going to take their dip, so it's going to be another way for states to make money. And so I'm told those pro formas show that it's huge. Who is it, Charles?
FanDuel is one of them. They have a few, actually. It's kind of old. There's nothing very new, but FanDuel – DraftKings is also authorized, but they have a couple authorized, but FanDuel and DraftKings are two of the big ones. So you were right.
So you were told that the pro formas show long-term that's where it is versus the expansion fees?
I was told that when this becomes kind of a nationwide thing, the sports gambling, that the gambling money the NBA will get – And just their small percentage will make the TV contracts pale. That's what I've been told.
Mm. That's strong. That's strong as new rope right there, because they got big TV money.
Yeah, huge. I
mean, yeah, that is
huge.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a lot of conversation going on, Dan, about how to build a team with the draft coming up. Before we take a break, let's talk briefly about that. With the draft coming up, you know, you've got the super teams that were built, okay, and then you've got the teams like Milwaukee that were built through either free agency or drafting.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a super team situation. Took longer to build, okay, but now the NBA, which you know, goes in cycles,
right,
with how you play the game and how the teams are built, et cetera, et cetera. The first in Milwaukee was built the old-fashioned way, and a lot of people are looking at it. People are talking about that. But the Milwaukee Bucks guard, Brian Forbes, has declined his player option for the 2022 season and will become an unrestricted free. A really good three-point shooter during the regular season, averaged 10 points in 19 minutes, and it was primarily from beyond the arc. Didn't shoot it as well. He made seven trays in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Right.
But outside of that, he didn't shoot it as well as he's had. So he's going to opt out and become a restricted free. Milwaukee got him from San Antonio after four seasons in free agency a year ago. So he signed a one-year deal.
One-year deal.
Yeah. Now, he's out there on the market. I just wonder what the Bucks, if they're going to continue – to go through the draft or try to add a player, and not just to replace him, but, I mean, he played a lot of ball. So he's got minutes to be replaced. But are they going to look at free agency and say, I want this guy and that guy? Not necessarily the top guy because
right.
they got Giannis.
Yeah.
But they're going to fill the spots maybe?
Well, and that's a role player.
Yep.
I mean, you look, they're going to have Middleton and Holiday and Giannis back, all three of them, and those are their main players. So it's a little easier. No, it's a lot easier to replace a role player than it is to replace one of your big three. But I like the fact that they built it the old-fashioned way. You know, the super teams first started when LeBron James took his talent to South Beach or whatever he said. And so, yes, sir.
Actually, I just got a text from our own Phil Baker. BetMGM is now the official partner of the NBA.
There you go.
So my apologies. Yeah. Outdated info. For
Thank you, Phil.
And there is nothing Phil Baker doesn't know about the NBA,
no,
the Lou,
right.
or the NBA, period.
You're exactly right.
He's the guy.
Thanks, Phil. What were we talking about? But so they built that, and they talked about, you know, how many championships are we going to win? Is it going to be 5, 6, 7? And, you know, and they did. That was pretty successful. But you look at these teams. I mean, Durant, I guess you could call that, when he went to Golden State, you could call that a super team. And that worked out okay. But, you know, you look, it's not always, you know, look at Brooklyn. Now, there were a lot of injuries involved. But that didn't work out too well. Davis going to the Lakers, they won the first one, but you know, you have to put a little asterisk by it because it was in the bubble. But I like teams, especially small market teams.
Absolutely,
I like that they can that they still can build a team to win a championship.
Yeah, I agree. I like that. I hope that continues on. With some other teams that are trying to build. You know, the Warriors don't think they're far off. They got a couple first-round picks. I think they've got one in the lottery, maybe two in the lottery.
Yeah.
And they're going to try to ride out what's left of Curry and Klay Thompson when he comes back and Draymond Green. So that will be and of course, you got the Clippers, the paper clips. You know, if Leonard comes back, they're there, man. They're going to play toe-to-toe maybe better than the Lakers across town, and they were built by free agency.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't built from the ground
no,
up.
No, you're right. But, you know, look at Phoenix. Now, they brought in Chris Paul to kind of solidify that, but you look at their other two really good players, Booker and Domin Ayton, and they were both draft picks too. So,
and they had to have the patience to let Domin Ayton develop,
right?
And Booker too,
yeah.
Because Booker has really become so effective off the bounce. We never saw that at Kentucky, and he's really improved his game.
Yeah.
And defensively, you know, at Kentucky, he had a hard time staying between the ball and the basket, but he can do that now in the NBA, and that's basically what defense is: blocking shots. But if you can stay between the ball and the basket, mean that they're so good offensively that you're not going to shut a guy down.
No,
you just can't let him go on one of those magical runs and score 40 or 50 on you, you know?
You're right. Golden State has the 7th pick and the 14th pick.
So, 14, Miami, for example, picked up Bam and Tyler Hero in that area, 13 mm-hmm. or 14.
Right.
Two pretty good pickups
Absolutely.
For the Heat.
Yep.
So, that's not bad. Now, the 7th? Yeah, that might be kind of like the gray area. You get outside those people we talked about. I don't know who they could. They got to find somebody that can play without the ball. That's for sure.
Yeah.
With Thompson and Curry.
They're talking the mock draft I'm looking at. They're talking about the Kuminga guy. So
Weissman, their number one pick a year ago, the kid from Memphis, was hurt a lot.
Right,
I'm not so sure they're sold on him.
Right. Right. But the whole key to that team is going to be if Klay Thompson can come back
and be
what he used to be. And you know, Mike, a guy's out 2 years with two different injuries. That's awfully difficult to overcome.
That sure is. And that's a shame because that kid was I really enjoyed watching him because he was old school. He played without the ball. He used those picks down at the block and kept turning up and catch and shoot. Mm-hmm. He wasn't a ball dominant player. Okay, that's Curry. All right.
Yeah.
That's Curry. Klay Thompson, he was fun to watch. If you just watched him and how hard he worked to find his spot and find the ball, it was fun.
I would put him in the category of a three-level scorer. Is that right? Yeah. Did I say that right?
No.
What is
No, it? I wouldn't say he's three-level. Oh. He was more of a beyond the arc and at the rim guy.
So he's a two-level scorer.
Two-level scorer. Okay. Now, right. You should have – I thought of you last night. I thought of you last night because Jimmy Jackson, some yard bird, I didn't know who he was from draft to USA, and then the moderator, and then Andy Katz from ESPN and Rex, our guy Rex.
Right.
And I'll guarantee you, Charles, I'll guarantee you that six times at least, minimum, three-level score.
Three-level. Oh, it's three-level. I'm sorry. I thought it was triple-level.
Three-level. Three-level.
Yeah. When you get them that card for Kim Crawford Wine Celebrity Hotline, would you also make a card up for me? Three-level score.
Oh, I thought of you last night, man. I was going back and forth between baseball and listening to see what these guys said about these players. And they used that at least six times talking about a guy.
Well, hey, you – Mike, you are nothing if not contemporary. I mean, you know what's going on. I've got to pay attention.
Well, it's not horse racing, so you can't get diverted from horse racing. And you know what? I'll say this before we go. There's a couple of things. How about Pat Forty's daughter, Brooke? She was the leg on the she was the anchor leg on the 4x20 in the semifinals for the USA team. She is one terrific swimmer.
That's great.
And she'll be in the finals, and Dad ought to be awful happy over
Absolutely.
There in Japan, smiling.
That's terrific. Do they have a chance to medal?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I would think, and I don't know that, I would think that they're the favorite.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I would think so. Yeah. I mean, they're pretty strong. Yeah. Women's
swimming
team.
We haven't mentioned the Olympics yet this morning, and the basketball team bounced back. And beat Iran 120-66.
Was the Ayatollah there?
But I wouldn't get too excited about that because I think you and me and Charles could beat Iran. So
we have to add cream.
So I wouldn't get too excited about that. But it was interesting that they there were some players, and this always happens when you lose, there's some grumbling in the locker room.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
There were some players that weren't too happy with Pop and the offense that he was playing. And so he put Holiday and Booker in the starting lineup. And you were talking earlier about four guards.
Yep.
And you could basically say, now Durant, I guess he's more of a small forward. But you could basically say they started four guards in that game.
And
against,
Bam.
With Lillard being in there in that starting lineup. And they just kind of ran right over the top of Iran.
I ran
over Iran.
And the Ayatollah. Both of them. All together in one.
So everybody can take a deep breath. Yeah. USA basketball, even if they don't win the gold medal, we know they can beat Iran.
There you go.
Yeah.
And we'll leave that statement from Mr. Issel. We'll move forward to take a break and come back. Talk some baseball. Hal McCoy, the Hall of Fame sports writer, baseball Hall of Fame sports writer, going to jump on with us and we'll talk about, and this kills you, I know, yes, Reds, buyer or seller. Cubs, we know they're a seller.
Yeah.
We'll be back.
Be a part of the show on the UPS Jobs.